Hi everyone, and welcome to the Business of Customer Love podcast, brought to you by Mention Me. I'm your host Simeon Atkins, and thanks for joining us today. Growing your brand through customer love might seem like an idea that belongs in the company cafe rather than the boardroom. But identifying, growing, and activating a base of loyal fans is serious business, and the results of harnessing customer advocacy can be truly transformational for both your company and your customers. We gather experts from across the space to shine a light on how you can unleash a virtuous cycle of sustainable organic growth where your best customers keep coming back and bringing their friends too. So let's get into today's episode. So I'm delighted to be joined today by Angela Porter. Now, Angela is a vastly experienced marketing leader, having held roles at the likes of Tesco's, Dunelm and Ladbrokes, and her most recent role was CMO at ProCook. Angela, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Simeon, and thank you for the introduction.
So you're here today to discuss the journey that ProCook and Mention Me have been on to essentially turn customer advocacy into a sustainable and profitable growth channel within the business. Before we dive in, though, do you want to give a quick introduction to our listeners?
Yes, absolutely. So as you said, yes, I've got quite a vast experience of different sectors, but always in consumer marketing and always from a kind of data-led consumer marketing as well. And I think what's starting to get really exciting in the market is looking at the behaviours of customers and how to use that to kind of amplify your own brand and business forward, which is why I'm excited to work with Mention Me and speak to you guys today.
Amazing. And how that consumer behaviour has changed certainly over the last few years as well is fascinating, isn't it? And certainly lots to explore there. Now, as traditional on the show, to get things kicked off, I'd love for you to share a time recently where, as a consumer, you experienced customer love firsthand and really what impact that had on you as a consumer as well.
So it's a brilliant question. I was thinking about it earlier, and you know, it's more than a year ago that anything happened that I would actually want to mention. And that's after a lot of, you know, turmoils with the likes of everything that we all do around car insurance, goodness knows what else. But just over a year ago, I was moving home and actually moving back to the UK. So logistically, that all gets a bit complicated about getting deliveries and such like. And I had a couple of absolute disasters with furniture companies, not turning up when they needed to, and I'd taken time off to sit at home, or using third-party delivery services that then let them down from an attitude and customer behaviour point of view. Anyway, I'd ordered a sofa from a sofa company. This isn't the BBC, so I can mention names, I'm sure. It's a company that I'd never heard of, but I found them online called Exome. And I ordered a sofa, and that was fine. I then messaged them to say, can I specify exactly when I want this to get delivered before I kind of put the final order through? And they said, as long as it's within these dates, that's fine. This was all happening on WhatsApp, so it was immediate. And the response was immediate. And anyway, they were great. They said, definitely get delivered on this day. And then about a week before it was going to get delivered, they messaged me to say, actually, there's been an issue with your delivery and the sofa's been damaged, but we cannot offer you one that's a slightly different aspect, but we'll give you a free footstool. Will that be okay? And I kind of went, yeah, that's fine, thanks. Quite happy with my free footstool, still getting delivered on the same day. So that was all really great. They kept me up to date. It was all done immediately and I felt really valued as a customer. So that was just a normal sofa delivery. Chaps turned up. They were exceptional. They set the sofa up. They then gave us a briefing on how to undo the sofa bed. And then I got a call a couple of days later from the customer service to make sure everything was okay. And at that point, I'm going, this is a good service. A couple of weeks later, I then ordered another sofa from them for one of the spare rooms, but I did it in my husband's name. And I then messaged them on WhatsApp, say, hey, I don't suppose I can change this delivery date for this order. They came back to me and said, we didn't realise that this was the same customer. You're a returning customer. We'll refund you £25.
Wow.
And I'm still talking about it to this day because, you know, that was customer service above and beyond. But everything about it, their speed of response, the checking up to make sure everything was okay, everything was done just as expected, if not better. It was their own delivery chaps that were delivering it, so they took responsibility. They obviously lived the same company values of making sure the customer was really delighted. And as I say, the icing on the cake was, oh, sorry, we didn't realise you were a returning customer. Here's £25 back. That's just not what you would expect. And I think that surprise and delight element of it really, really kind of exceeded my expectations. But the fact that that was more than a year ago, and I can't think of any other example that I would want to mention to you, just shows you the power of actually customer first service and exceeding expectations. And it's quite sad that nothing else has happened within that year, but that's the case.
We'll choose to take the positives from that rather than focusing on the negatives of the fact you couldn't think of anything more recent. But it's a brilliant example. I personally love WhatsApp as a channel as well for communication, customer service. Like, I've used a couple of companies recently where you just, the response you get obviously is instantaneous, you know, and you're not having to kind of wait in a queue on a phone or anything like that. So I personally really like that channel. I think for a company like that, that do sofas and furniture and things like that, it's very difficult to find repeat customers as well, isn't it? Because these are purchases that you might be making once every year, couple of years, 5 years, whatever it is. Like, if it's a bed, obviously it's going to be more. And I think for those companies to be able to drive advocacy and repeat business is huge for them. Like, that's a massive competitive advantage for them. And to be generating those kind of experiences for customers like yourself, who are then going on to advocate to other people and bring them to the table for them, that's hugely positive. So it's a great example.
Yeah, I mean, I used WhatsApp a few weeks ago, actually, with an airline, and I was flying out with some skiing luggage because I was going skiing. And I only used WhatsApp so that I had something from their head office to say that my luggage allowance was as it's stated, because every time I fly with this airline, they give me grief about how my ski luggage is configured. And so when I got to check-in, I'd only used it as a backup. And that's a positive experience from their kind of head office organisation and their kind of customer policy. But at check-in, that value obviously hasn't driven down into every single person that works for them, because you're challenged every time. And I think the difference with the sofa company versus that experience was it felt like everyone had been briefed with the same customer delight at the heart of what they were doing, which, as I say, was quite exceptional and not expected.
Yeah, fabulous example. So this term customer love obviously means different things to different people. Some people it'd be quite a fluffy term, quite hard to measure, quite difficult to really quantify and justify. I'd love to get your take on, you know, in your experience of working at, you know, these various different companies at very senior levels as well. What does customer love mean to you?
Yes, I think if you can get a customer to say that they really love you, it's at the point that the customer would not think of looking elsewhere before they look at you. So I know where I'd look for my next sofa. I know where I wouldn't look for my next car insurance.
I think I know where I'll be looking for my next sofa as well.
Yeah, exactly, and all the listeners. But, you know, that idea of a customer just being so attached to you emotionally, not just rationally as a business, because of the experience or the product or the extra mile that you're going to, that's customer love. It's, in my mind, it's one stage beyond that kind of typical model of consideration. Beyond consideration, it's my go-to. And only if that business doesn't have exactly what I need, would I consider someone else. I think when a lot of businesses go back to the older model of awareness, consideration, purchase, they're looking at that consideration of, would you think about that brand, or would you think about that product or business? Not, is it the only thing you'd think about, or is it your go-to, or is it your first? And I think that's where, when a business and a brand can drive proper advocacy and love for their product and service. That's why, as I said, you know, if anyone asks me about a sofa, I direct them to one place. That's proper customer love.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we forget as consumers, we're most of the time buying from an emotional standpoint rather than the rational standpoint. So I think anything that brands can do to really tap into that, that emotional side of consumers and talking to that side, is going to be hugely powerful. And as you said, they're sort of driving advocacy. And, you know, like you were saying there, I think that's really why brands should care and think about customer love. It's going, as you said, beyond those sort of traditional models. And really tapping into something deeper and building that emotional connection, as you said there.
Yeah, and I think it's a really good point. I mean, very, very few of our purchases are ever made on completely rational basis, because actually we don't need much in our lives. You know, we don't need as many sweaters as we've got, or as many pairs of trainers, or the cars that we drive. We don't functionally need them. We need functional items, but very few people buy for functional reasons. We buy for subconscious emotional reasons. And they tend to be influenced by others around us, or things that we see, or things that we overhear. And I think more so as consumers get savvy towards the joys of advertising and how kind of constructed advertising works, they're looking for a deeper connection with referrals, or a deeper connection with people that have had that experience, which is where I think it just, as you say, tapping into that emotional connection to drive a rational purchase, or better still, people that try and back up their emotional purchases with rational reasoning. It always amuses me, but we all do it. We all do it. I'm terrible at doing it.
I genuinely can't remember the last time I made a rational purchase. I'm trying to think back to like some of the stuff I've bought recently, like for me or my kids, or I mean, there's stuff that I probably do need, but like it was all bought from like an emotional standpoint as well. And a lot of times it is from people that recommend it, particularly like for my kids as well. Like, you know, brands that other people have recommended is hugely, hugely important, you know, from a trust perspective and all that kind of stuff. It really does break through the traditional advertising. You're spot on there. So I want to go back to the kind of early days at ProCook, or the early days in the relationship between ProCook and Mention Me. Can you just remind us or tell us, what were some of the initial goals and challenges that you were facing at ProCook that led you to have those initial conversations with Mention Me and ultimately strike up a relationship?
Well, to be honest, I think that the motivator of it was some of the behaviours we've just been discussing. You know, within anyone's sphere of friends, you've got your experts, right? You've got the person you go to talk about cars or, I don't know, cameras or mobile phones or tech or bicycles or whatever. And we know that the customers that we were serving think that they're kind of, you know, amateur enthusiasts and expert cooks in their own right. We wanted to tap into that because, you know, the people that shop from ProCook love the product. It's great quality, great value. And we just wanted them to tell others about it and make it really easy for them to facilitate it, to allow them to kind of take pride in being that expert in their group, but also to give that trusted recommendation to others that might not understand or might not be quite as knowledgeable about the type of kitchenware that they need. So when we started speaking to Mention Me, that tool, your tool, was just the right way of doing that. And it was, you know, proof of concept experiment at the time. I hadn't used the product and the platform before, but it just made sense of being a true influencer platform to give us that more trusted, expansive reach to a new set of customers.
Yeah. And what you're saying there about, you know, I think the kind of customers that you have at ProCook, those amateur enthusiasts, you know, that's just such a great opportunity to be able to tap into people like that, because they do become very passionate about your brand. It becomes part of your identity, and therefore the brand that you're using to support that then becomes part of your identity. So you're already forming that really strong emotional connection. And that's not just to say that you have to be that kind of brand or that kind of service to build that emotional connection. We've had plenty of experiences on this show of people from maybe slightly more mundane industries building very strong emotional connections with people. But I think you were probably kind of one step ahead in terms of those kind of customers that you had, and being able to build those really strong relationships with them as well.
Yeah. And, you know, when I talk about kind of amateur cooks, these were people that really wanted to talk about what they were doing and talk about what they were creating. So to help them and give them that platform to do it was something that was beneficial to them, as well as the people that they were sharing it with. I also think the frequency of the type of business that you guys work with is really, really important to consider, because, you know, we don't replace our knives or cookware that often at all. So to look at growing a business through frequency in that sector is really quite difficult. It's about acquisition and frequency, obviously. So to find an easier way of acquiring customers that are going to be the right demographic to buy into what we were selling, again, what easier way of doing it than to use customers that already love us?
And had you tried anything like this before? Because I think there'll be people that are listening that are saying, okay, this sounds great, we've not tried anything like this before, we've committed a lot of our budget to the more traditional marketing channels, your Metas, your Googles, etc. We, you know, they might not necessarily be perfect, but we know what kind of results they're going to drive and what ROI we can expect. Do you have any advice for those brands that maybe haven't tried this before, and how they should think about, you know, potentially reallocating or dedicating some budget to a channel that they haven't tried before? They don't necessarily know what ROI they're going to get, but it sounds like something that could work really well for their business.
Absolutely. Just think back to the days when Meta wasn't a thing and you had to start somewhere. You know, if you don't take a risk, if you don't take a step forward, you're never going to learn. So it's just about thinking about how can you allocate the right model, the right KPIs and the right goals for Mention Me, and then monitor the relationship and make sure that you're testing and learning. And where something's not working, you switch it off and you fail fast and you move on. But the way that I looked at it was purely on a return basis. what's it costing me? What would I need to do to return this? And how do we agree a set of KPIs together that we can model? But I think, again, going back to the really simple, just be brave and take a step forward. Because at some point, everyone that's been a marketeer has had to try a new channel, has had to invest in something different, has had to try a new messaging or spend more on Meta and work out the attribution it had on other channels. That's kind of daily ways of working. I think it becomes scary when it's a new relationship or an untried or untested platform, which for many people, mention me or similar tools would be. But you're never going to know if it works for your business unless you try.
And something I want to speak to you about a bit later is the conversation with your CFO or someone sort of higher up the chain where, you know, it's justifying the budgets to those kind of people as well. You know, different conversations to maybe what you're having at your team level. But before we dive into that, I'd love to explore in a little bit more detail the campaign between ProCook and MentionMe. So what kind of initiatives you were running, how successful they were, what kind of results you got from them, what kind of approaches you took. And also you mentioned something really important there around the test and learn. And that's something very big at MentionMe that we advise our clients to do, is constantly A/B testing campaigns, checking how things are going, and obviously adjusting accordingly. So yeah, I'd love to dive into that in a little bit more detail with you.
Sure. I mean, like most businesses, ProCook has and had new customer offers and existing customer offers. So all of that type of special offers for certain cohorts of customers, etc., was happening as it does in every organization. We're constantly emailed about 10% off here's, 20% off here's, buy it now from a range of businesses, as you will be. And this was just about taking that model and expanding it slightly, so that rather than just giving that new customer or existing customer the opportunity to buy into an immediacy of purchase, we were expanding that to allow them to speak to their networks too. And, you know, I worked with the team, your team, to make sure that we had the right commercial model in place to allow us to feel confident that at different milestones, we would monitor and move forward the way that those KPIs and goals were being met. I think what was really interesting, though, was playing around with what those offers are. Is it a discount? Is it a product? Is it a discount for the kind of referrer or a referee, or is it a product for that? And seeing what worked at different types of cohorts and different levels of spend. And just as I was leaving ProCook, the team were then looking into the buckets of types of customers that were going to move that even further forward for them. And I think the thing that excites me about the tool that you have is not just looking at that first referrer, but then chasing them through what their sphere of influence can be. I mean, that is fundamentally the way that influencer marketing works. And a lot of businesses would be saying, oh, we're working with this influencer or this micro influencer or this macro influencer over here. Well, actually, what your tool would allow you to do is think about every single customer as their own influencer in their own group, which must be more trusted. So I think playing with the different products and playing with the different offers was something that the team were very, very good at moving with agility on, and kind of, as I say, test and learn and move forward. And it's really exciting to see the results, because you'd see them pretty immediately and go, oh, well, that worked here and that worked there. But it takes planning, you know, especially if you're using product-based offers and product-based promotions, that takes planning. And it takes planning not just from the marketing team, but from the purchasing team, from the logistics team, from the stores team, to make sure that everyone's briefed on exactly how that customer delight has to come to life. Because if you're offering a new customer, as I say, whether it's a discount or a product, and then when they try to redeem that, it's a bad experience, the whole thing falls down. As my previous example of the airline that I deliberately messaged just so I had proof of, no, your boss said that. Mm. You don't want that to be happening. So I think that making sure the whole business was engaged so that we could pull on those levers and test and learn and move forward was really critical.
And what kind of results did you see? And what kind of levers was this pulling on, you know, be it kind of new customer acquisition, profitable growth? Like, I'd love to kind of explore that in a little bit more detail as well.
Well, I think the interesting thing is it hits all the metrics if you get it right. It's new customer acquisition because your current customer is referring someone else. It's repeat purchase from that customer that's just purchased with you. And again, like most organizations, trying to get a 30-day repeat rate is important for most industries. So trying to pull on those levers, and that in itself obviously leads to profitable growth. Understanding the cost of MentionMe versus other channels was something that was really interesting, so that when we were looking at the profitability of any marketing model, that was being taken into account. It wasn't just a, it feels free because it's an email based send, kind of send, which again, it's easy to fall into that trap. And certainly at ProKick, it's far more considered than that. And in most all the organisations I have worked at that have all been data based, it's a lot more considered than that. But yeah, making sure that all of that came into one big commercial model, and that we were looking at the customer that was referring, the referee, and the overall growth that the tool was promoting for us.
Mm. Okay. So if I'm sitting here as a marketer now and I'm thinking, okay, I get the why, I get why customer advocacy is important, I get some of the benefits of it. I suppose my next question would be, why now? So I've got lots of other projects I'm looking at, lots of other things I'm looking to test and learn from. I've still obviously got my big priorities with Google and Meta. So why should I, do you think, have more of an urgency around implementing a customer advocacy marketing strategy now rather than thinking about it in 12 or 24 months time?
I think in 12 or 24 months time, other businesses would be ahead of you if you were thinking about it then. And the reason that I say that is, you know, 10 years ago, the channels that we had to choose from as marketeers were limited. 5 years ago, there were far more of them. And now it's every single time a customer comes into contact with anything digital, anything visual that's marketing related, it's just throwing messages at them. So the kind of proliferation of marketing channels has never been so kind of extreme. And making sure that you're using trusted channels to speak to customers will become more and more and more important, because, you know, people are believing they're believing media messages less, right? So whether that's news messages and political messages or advertising messages, people are believing things less, and they want truth, and they want to make their own minds up. That allows them to research a lot online. It allows them to speak to people, you know, social media being the go-to platform for most people to get any type of referral or trusted review. That just wasn't there 10 years ago, and it is now. And I think that as customers have all of those tools available to them right at their fingertips or at the end of the phone with friends or families, having that trusted element as the first step of someone hearing about a brand is just bypassing all of that stuff that you usually have to do with awareness and kind of softer consideration, where, you know, if you're the person that I go to speak about cars and you tell me to go and explore a certain brand of car, I'll just do it because I trust you. And I think that if you can do it correctly for customers, then I think it will cut out a lot of other types of channel spend, which might be a bit more broadcast reaching but less trusted. The trick in doing it will be to really, really give the customer the story to tell to the next person, like my sofa example at the beginning. I think the other thing that's really, really important is you as a customer, you as a human being, will only attach your name to something that kind of does you proud, right? That's a really Scottish phrase, but there we go. It kind of gives you a bit of pride. So if even if you're being offered a discount or a promotional code from a brand to get you to refer to another person, you're not going to do it if that's going to reflect badly on you. You're not going to do it if your friend or family or contact is going to have a bad experience. So the nature of trust in that is already absolutely inherent, because you're not going to attach your name to anything that you don't believe in. With other types of advertising and other types of messaging, a brand is never going to tell you that something's not going to be great. A brand's obviously going to tell you the story and the messaging, which may be 100% true, but you're going to have to make your own mind up about that, versus me saying, no, honestly, this was the experience I had. There's no debate about it. This is the experience I had. It's going to be so much more deeper in terms of that emotional connection from a very kind of early doors than it would be, as I said earlier, if you have to go through that funnel.
Angela, we've covered some amazing ground today. The last thing that I wanted to discuss with you, and we touched on it a little bit earlier on, was if you had any advice on putting a business case together to a CFO or someone else senior up in the business around investing in customer advocacy. Again, if it's a channel that hasn't necessarily been used in the business before, and you're trying to kind of prove the value through something different, how would you approach that with someone like a CFO particularly?
Yeah, it's a really, really tricky question. And I think it would absolutely go back to what industry and what sector and what business and brand it was, and what the KPIs that they were trying to achieve were. And I think it's all starting from, what behaviour do you want to change? If you are a high frequency, low value brand, the business case would be very different. You'd probably be thinking about that as a direct return. mm-hmm. and an immediate return on your investment. If you are a lower frequency, higher price, higher consideration purchase, then you'd probably be thinking about it as much as reach and new customer awareness as you would do that consideration and purchase. But I think it's all just going back to that basic marketing funnel of what do you want? Where does it fit? You know, if you've got everything from broadcast to direct return on investment, where does this tool fit within your specific funnel? Because it will be different for every business. And then making sure that you're setting the goals for Mention Me Up as joint KPIs. Hmm. You're setting up the test and learn plan together, and then you're monitoring that. And I think that, you know, certainly the way that I would always work with a CFO is to say, like, our overall marketing budget's here, our overall return needs to be here, and this is the part that this has to play. Let's discuss and debate and then drive it forward, but really understanding the part it has to play, because it will be very, very different for different types of frequency of purchase and value of purchase.
Angela, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Business of Customer Love podcast, hosted by Mention Me. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to join us next time, where we'll be speaking to some more amazing guests about how you can harness the power of customer love. See you again soon.